Hi, I'm Will Schofield, cellist with the Academy of St Martin in the Fields. Welcome to the second in our series of Academy podcasts. Throughout this series, we will speak to some of the world's great musicians, examining the work and repertoire at the heart of this much-loved chamber orchestra's yearly schedule. In this episode, we speak to two of the world's great string soloists about Johannes Brahms' beautiful double concerto. Cellist Stephen Isselis.
The whole thing about the friendship and the rift with Joachim, I think that's very inspirational somehow for playing this piece. But finally, it's the score that should tell you the story.
And violinist and Academy Music Director Joshua Bell.
What I like about playing with Stephen is that you don't always know what's going to happen in the concert. He allows, even after careful study and analysis of the piece, in the moment, things still can happen that you hadn't planned for, which I think is really important in music.
Podcaster Ben Eshmade caught up with the old friends in central London to find out what they're looking forward to about performing this key work of Brahms' career together.
When and how did you meet for the first time?
We met at the Spoleto Festival in Charleston, South Carolina. And I'd heard about this sort of whiz kid who was going to turn up, and I made up my mind to dislike him before he arrived. And I was quite right. I don't know why I changed my mind. I should have stayed with my principles.
I had never heard of Stephen Isselis, so luckily I didn't have any preconceived ideas. When we met in 1980, actually I think it was 87, I was actually 19 years old. I don't know how old that makes you, I won't say. Yeah, we met, it was a chamber music festival, we were sort of forced upon each other to play certain pieces. I was, well, I don't want to say, he's sitting in the room, I don't want to say too many nice things about him. But
be honest.
But I think we got on musically and personally, and we became good friends soon after that, and yeah, it's been almost 30 years. So
how have you influenced each other over the years, do you think?
Well, I was telling, there was this one moment where I went to the festival hall to watch Josh play a concerto, and he bowed to the people at the back first. I was very impressed by that, and I've done the same ever since.
Thank you, Steve. That's very, very sweet. I think through argument, we argue a lot. I think it helps define your musical ideas. But by having to defend yourself, defend your ideas, I think it actually makes you a better musician in that way. So that's my answer.
Yeah, I think even when your ideas are indefensible, you've become more articulate trying to defend them.
Do you know each other's musical style sort of inside out? Is it like two people having a conversation?
It is very much like that. I mean, we're very different and very somehow compatible as well. Yeah, and we know each other. Josh once said it was like we finish each other's musical sentences a bit.
Yeah, I think it's just like finding a chamber music partner is a bit like any relationship. You want someone that's going to challenge. You don't want someone that's exactly playing exactly every phrase the way you would have imagined it. Just like in relationships, you know, you don't want to find your carbon copy, but you want to have someone that has basic, I guess, musical values are aligned. And what I like about playing with Stephen is that you don't always know what's going to happen in the concert. He allows, even after careful study and analysis of the piece, in the moment, things still can happen that you hadn't planned for, which I think is really important in music.
Which is because of the careful study and analysis of the piece that gives you the freedom. But yeah, it's like conversation. It's like when you meet somebody at a party. You can stand there and think, what am I going to say to this person? Or else you can just start talking and just, you don't stop all evening. And that's somehow how we started playing together, that the conversation flowed.
How do the two instruments sort of correlate with each other? I mean, how do you see the relationship between the cello and the violin?
Well, the violin's sort of small and a bit squeaky and quite shrill, and the cello is mellow and beautiful and lyrical. So, yeah, they sort of, you know, contrast quite well.
If you could actually hear the cello, it would be lyrical and beautiful. And that's actually, this piece is the Brahms double is a conversation. I mean, it's obviously, as a double concerto, it's an unusual format for a concerto. It allows for this kind of conversation. And I think Brahms and Joachim wrote it. I think it signifies a lot of their relationship in the piece. I believe it came at a time where they were sort of resolving some kind of feud. And you can feel that in the music, a kind of making peace at certain points in the music.
You can hear it. There's all sorts of little references, which he says when he's writing it, I can put all sorts of little japes in here. And the second bar is a sort of slightly reworked version of Joachim's early motto, which is Frei aber einsam, which is free but alone, which they'd written a whole sonata around it earlier. And then there's the second theme of the first movement is based on one of Joachim's favourite pieces that Brahms loved as well, the Viotti, a 22nd violin concerto. And there's bits in the music where music just stops for a whole bar's silence unexpectedly and then just carries on again. And that's, wow. I'm sure that's symbolic. And even the first thing, you know, the cello, funnily enough, is the angry one, because, I mean, I think Brahms possibly suffered even more than Joachim from the rupture. The cello sounds very angry and sort of gruff, and the violin comes in pleadingly and gently. So maybe that was... It's funny that the violin should be the one pleading when Brahms felt he was the one pleading. But anyway, that's musically, it has to be that way.
You're listening to an Academy of St. Martin in the Fields podcast with me, Will Schofield. Brahms composed his double concerto in 1887 with two particular musicians in mind, the cellist Robert Hausmann and Brahms's great friend, the violinist, Joseph Joachim. Joachim was one of the most significant musicians of his age. He'd studied composition with leading composers. He'd been friends with Mendelssohn, Robert and Clara Schumann, and he'd helped Brahms a lot in his early career, introducing him in particular to the Schumanns. They'd had a firm friendship for at least 30 years when, unfortunately, they had a major falling out. Joachim had suspected his wife of having an affair, and Brahms, perhaps rather naively, had written to Joachim's wife, the singer Amelie Wies, expressing his support for her and casting doubt on the story of her affair. Unfortunately, this letter was then produced in court as evidence of Joachim's unreasonable behaviour. Joachim lost his petition for divorce. Brahms, for his part, wanted to make amends. So when Hausmann came to him with the suggestion for a cello concerto, he seized upon the opportunity to write the double concerto for violin and cello. Let's return to Joshua Bell and Stephen Islis to find out more about this unique work.
What are the challenges of the double concerto?
Well, actually, I think a particular challenge for this performance is that there's no conductor. I've always thought of it as a conductor's piece, but they want to do it without a conductor, so okay. It's just really, because it's so much a chamber music piece, not just between cello and violin, but between those two instruments and the orchestra. It's really one very intermeshed structure. In a way, it's one of Brahms' stranger pieces, because he is writing for two soloists with their two different natures, and yet sometimes he's contrasting them, sometimes he's putting them together. But to make it really convincing, I think you need it's got to have a very solid set of tempo relationships, not be indulged.
That's true of Brahms and the symphonies as well, and a lot of his music, that if it becomes overindulgent, the structure just falls through. And I've heard so many performances of the symphonies that I feel that way, where there's such great moments, and to dwell on those moments, you lose the overall structure. This piece is definitely that as well. And I think we're going to find that there's some things that will be actually easier that we don't have a conductor, that it forces you actually to be less indulgent and to actually play more logically when you don't have a conductor. And I'm excited about doing it this way.
Who's going to take the lead when you're rehearsing?
Both of us, I presume.
Yeah.
Well, he's director and I'm naturally bossy, so I think that works out 50-50.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Stephen will certainly have his two cents.
Many of the great cellists and violinists of the 20th century seem to have recorded this concerto. Do you listen to those, or do you just want to abandon those recordings?
I always abandon recordings of every piece I'm playing. I just don't find that a sort of viable way of learning any piece. Great though they may be, but having said that, I used to love the recording that Thibaut and Casals made with their normally pianist partner, Alfred Cortot, conducting. That's a lovely recording. But I won't listen to it. I'll sit for hours at the piano, just playing the piano transcription of the score.
Yeah, I actually have not heard a recording for a while. I certainly grew up listening to various. I have not heard the Thibaut recording, and I've lately been listening to some of Jacques Thibaut and really loving his playing. But yeah, I think listening to recordings is not it's not something I do a lot of.
Are there any other forms of inspiration? Do you read a lot about the composers?
I certainly like to read a lot about the composers. Of course, every word he's written about it. And actually, you can see the original manuscript online, which is interesting. Yeah, so I've been looking at that, and I will be looking at it again. Although his bowings and articulations are very strange. I find them very hard to follow. I'm sort of taking them as messages rather than bowings. The whole thing about the friendship and the rift with Joachim, I think that's very inspirational somehow for playing this piece. But finally, it's the score that should tell you the story. You don't graft the story onto the score.
Do you have any plans at any point to record this together?
Looks like we're after this tour is finished with this group. Since we'll have done it so many times, I think it'll be. I'm not sure we'll ever have a chance to do it that many times together again. So now's a good time. So it looks like we will do it.
No, it's nice to have
documentation.
Yeah, it's nice to have time. You know, recording is a photograph of the way you looked that day.
What else will sort of accompany this in the performance?
Well, Josh is going to direct the Eighth Symphony by Beethoven, perhaps the most interesting piece, and this is something I sort of worked quite hard at getting hold of, is the Schumann. There's this glorious violin concerto by Schumann, which is one of his last works and has never become popular as it should, because it's a great work. But it wasn't published till long after he died, in the 1930s. And Josh has sort of championed that piece, recorded it. I just read somewhere that Benjamin Britten had done an arrangement of the slow movement, which in the original goes straight into the last movement. He'd finished it. He'd written a tiny little coda so that it could be performed by Menuhin with Britten conducting, and called Elegy by Schumann for violin and string orchestra at a concert in Aldeburgh in memory of Dennis Brain, the great horn player who was tragically killed in a car accident. And so I was very interested, and I wrote to the foundation. They couldn't find it at that time, and then they were very helpful, the Britten Peers Foundation in Aldeburgh. They found it and they sent it to me. And so we now have it, and this has not been played, I'm sure, since that concert that Menuhin played it at once. I think it's very exciting. Of course, there's only a few bars by Britten, but any bars by Britten are fascinating. And the other point about this movement, it starts with this beautiful cello melody, which I will play, and then Josh plays the dreamy second melody.
I happen to love the Schumann Violin Concerto, and I've actually scheduled it for 2017 for a tour in the with the Academy, which I'm excited about. But even for those people who don't like the piece, which is a shame on them, but the slow movement is usually the thing they point to, saying, well, it does have a beautiful slow movement. So it's kind of hard to argue that, because it's one of the most beautiful things. I always wished to be able to play it on its own, just because it is so special. And so I'm excited to hear how it sounds. And it'll, of course, Schumann and Brahms on the same program, it's always a nice fit.
Any excuse for you two to be together in a concert performing work that you're passionate about? I mean, it just sounds like it's something you must look forward to.
I hate to admit it, but yes, I am looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's fun to get to, you know, I consider Stephen a great friend, and yet he lives in London and I'm in New York, so we don't get to be in the same place. Occasional festivals and passing through town, but it'll be fun to be on a tour together. Thank you.
I'm Academy cellist Will Schofield, and you've been listening to an Academy of St Martin in the Fields podcast. That's about all we have time for, but we'd love to hear your thoughts on what you have heard, so please do get in touch via our official Facebook page or on Twitter at ASMF Orchestra using the hashtag ASMF Podcast. You can experience the Brahms Double Concerto performed live by Stephen Isles, Joshua Bell, and the Academy of St Martin in the Fields in the UK or in Europe if you wish to book tickets for these concerts or find out more about the Academy or support our work by joining the Academy Friends. Please visit asmf.org. Thanks for listening.